Thank you. And to Torloy Brown we go, LSU men's basketball beat writer for The Advocate. How you doing, Torloy?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm confused, man. I got to tell you, I don't even know where to start with this. I was talking to Tim Zimmer about it, who mans Master Control, and my eyes have glazed over, and I'm trying to figure out where we are. Let's start with a snapshot of where LSU basketball is right now.
Yeah. So currently, LSU has four players signed to their roster. Will Wade has four, all of them college transfers, real simple clean, guys that are going to be juniors or seniors, all of them that are assigned to the team, one from Kentucky, a kid from Michigan State, a kid from Kansas State, and a point guard from UTSA.
Generally speaking, you need more than four people, don't you?
Of course.
Yeah.
So that's why the jokes have been flying. Only four signees, what's going on? So, it's slower on the, I guess LSU is, I won't say slow rolling, but they have to go through a bit more hoops in terms of getting more names on that roster officially. Feel fully secure, like this is our team. By all indications, when I spoke to a couple people with the team that are like in the know, they feel pretty confident, especially with the international players. So LSU has four more international guys that are committed that are as young as 20 years old, and I believe the oldest is either 24 now or is turning 24 later this year for the next college basketball season. And those four guys are good players. Those guys, again, they're not on the roster just yet, but these are experienced players that LSU internally feels pretty good that they're going to get eligible and be on the roster. And the latest now is that LSU just got a commitment from Sky Clark. He's a UCLA transfer, a combo guard, 6'3", a real productive player, and he's trying to get a fifth year of eligibility in I'm not sure if you know, but usually you don't get 5 years just to play college basketball. Even though the NCAA is trying to get to this new age-based eligibility rule, but they didn't want that to take into effect right now. But there's been a lot of lawsuits filed in different states, and there's even one that's in Colorado that's for a nationwide preliminary injunction for anyone that's a graduate in the high school class of 2022, which Sky Clark is. And right now, as it stands today, a court has granted a preliminary injunction for all nationwide for the class of 2022. Also, Sky Clark was a part of a lawsuit in California with like 70 or so players, and he was also granted a temporary restraining order, which is, again, like another layer of he's allowed to play college basketball for this upcoming season. So that was the latest that happened just yesterday.
So the injunction was for what?
Yeah, the injunction is for, in Colorado, the one that got a lot of headlines, it was for all these kids that want to play a fifth year of college basketball. The judge said if you were a high school graduate of 2022, which if they played 4 years means they were a senior just this past season, mm-hmm. then you get a fifth year of eligibility.
And what was...
There's also been... Oh, go
ahead. Go ahead, finish.
Yeah, and also, like, there's been other smaller, I guess not nationwide sort of... lawsuits, one in California, one in Ohio. The one that pertains to an LSU player was the one in California as well, where Sky Clark was one of 70 or so players that got a temporary restraining order that says, like, no matter what the NCAA's rules are, like, these guys are eligible to play right now for basketball.
What's the reason for the extra year of eligibility?
Yeah, so the reason is that the NCAA already is in the process of changing its rules. I believe that starting for, I think, this high school class that's entering, if I'm not mistaken, that they will have 5 years to play college basketball. So no more. They don't want too many people trying to apply to things. The NCAA on its own wants this 5 years, five for five is what they're calling it, to be done in, like, just all throughout college athletics. However, players that are just now graduating say that's not fair. How come they get 5 years but we don't, and we're just older and now it's, like, too late for us? So that's why these players want a fifth year, is because they think it's unfair that they only get 4 years while these other guys get five going forward.
When you say five for five, it's five players?
You got five seasons. Play five. Like, you can play, yeah, you can play five seasons.
To so play five what?
Yeah, each player has a chance to play five seasons once they start their college career. And it's either when you graduate high school or the year that you turn 19. like that's the like the start date for it. Is it like there's no more redshirts essentially? Like, you can't redshirt 2 years and then you can all of a sudden play 6 years. It's like a clean 5 years. Like, you can only play 5 seasons of whatever sport you are playing.
This
and
would
that's what the NCAA is trying to get instituted, but just not this early.
This would apply to all sports or just basketball?
All sports.
All sports. Okay. And how does it stand now, Toiloy?
Yeah. So right now, things are changing. I'm not a legal expert, so right. I don't know all the legalese terms. But as it stands right now, the Colorado case that has the preliminary injunction for all these 2022 high school graduates that are trying to get a fifth year, right now they're eligible as of today. So that affects college football, where a lot of these kids can like just play today that are going to be fifth years. That were 2022 high school graduates. It can change because the NCAA, again, I don't know all the legalese terms. The NCAA can ask for a motion to stay, which means that it wants to try to pause this, like timeout, let's not have this happen just yet. And I believe that was denied by the courts in that Colorado case. That's the one that's more wide-ranging. So right now, all these kids are eligible to play. It could change when it gets to basketball season, which is in a couple months from now. But that's why there are these smaller cases that are also like trying to push this. And Sky Clark, the LSU player that just got added, he's in the group in California that got the temporary restraining order granted.
So the idea is to keep people from being in college for 7 years playing sports?
Yeah, that's what the NCAA doesn't want. They don't want any more of these kids being 25, 26, trying to play college basketball. So it's just clean 5 years. And if you start college late, it doesn't matter. Your clock starts when you turn 19.
So we used to joke around about, you know, being 40 years old and not using any college eligibility. You can still go back and play. So that joke would not be valid anymore, right? Because
exactly.
The clock would start as soon as you graduated high school?
Yeah, so as soon as you graduate or when you turn 19, whatever comes first. So if you graduate high school at 20, let's say, your clock already started a year ago because you're already past 19. A big reason for this is also for the international players. They don't want international players getting 4 years of eligibility when they start college at 23. Right now, the status quo has been, okay, we'll allow you to play, but it's been a little bit murky in terms of, like, you can be 22 and be a freshman. Like, just last year, LSU had a player from Israel named Ron Zipper. He didn't play too much, but he was a 22-year-old that joined LSU's men's basketball team under Coach McMahon, got cleared, whatever. But he was listed on the roster as a freshman. So it was always like a weird thing, like, huh, he's a freshman, but he's 22. Does that technically mean he can just play 4 years and then be 26 or so?
Mm-hmm.
So he might have turned 23 during this past season. So that's also why the NCAA wants to get this done. But they just didn't want it to be grandfathered in for this class that is now, like, they're supposed to be trying to get to the NBA or play overseas. Now all these kids are probably going to get back, play for a college basketball team for fifth season.
When it comes to international players, how does that jive with their high school system or whatever they have over there?
Yeah, the international system, it depends. The status quo has been that if you've never played college basketball before and you're not, like, 29 years old, it's not too difficult to be cleared. I do know that during this offseason, the NCAA sent some guidelines that they kind of want to nip that in the bud. However, guidelines are not letter of the law, not rules per se.
Mm-hmm.
So as it stands right now, like, LSU feels pretty confident that their 22-year-old from Italy, their 6'7" forward, his name's Sally Niang, and other guys, like, they're going to be able to play on the roster. It's just that there's maybe I'm not in those rooms. So I don't know, like, in terms of, like, the flights and moving and all these things. Like, there's a couple more hoops to go through in order to go from wherever you are outside of the United States to play and get situated in Baton Rouge. What I was told is that someone that is very in the know, that they expect things to sort of be more official closer to when the school year starts. And I believe the first day for LSU is the 24th. So I would expect maybe next week or maybe the week after some of these international guys are on campus, they're set up for, like, being students and stuff, and obviously ready to play basketball.
Yeah, because they got to be students and stuff, right? You got some point?
Yeah.
You gotta...
Yeah, no, for sure.
So what's do you know what the deadline for enrolling is?
I do not know that off the top of my head. I just know that LSU, at least when I last spoke to someone that was very aware, they expect these things to be sort of pretty set by next week, maybe the week after, but when school starts, essentially.
So you would think that the least of it is getting enrolled in school. I don't mean to be dismissive when I say that, but that would be the easier part of all of this, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. And I'm sure there's ways to do that online. I'm sure they're not, for the first time, going to sign up for LSU classes right when they get to Baton Rouge. I'm sure there's been whatever academic liaisons that Will Wade has set up with whichever player in order to get them straight. Because, yeah, like, there's technology that we have that they don't have to just be in Louisiana to now get a, like, start that process. But yeah, that's my answer to that.
So where are most college programs right now, basketball programs?
Yeah, so LSU is sort of in the minority in terms of having just four players officially on the roster. Most of these teams, if not all these, like, power conference teams, they have at least 10 guys, like, minimum 10 players that you know, like, okay, this is what the team is looking like. There's a lot of teams do have open roster spots or contemplating maybe not having a walk-on come on because of these fifth years where you could potentially get another guy that could help your team that might be looking for a home and is clear to play. But generally speaking, most of these college teams, the power conference ones, the high major ones, they have at least 10 dudes. They've had some sort of summer practice. Some of them are doing more than others. They're also keeping their eyes on these court cases to see, can we add a player or two? And if we do we have enough roster space for that?
How hard is it going to be to throw this thing together at the last minute?
For LSU? So yeah. It depends. So LSU, if everything goes their way, and I should also mention they also have a commit named RJ Lewis. It also came out last night that he has a date for his preliminary injunction hearing. So he is.
That's the guy that played minor league for the Celtics?
Yeah, he played. He signed a two-way contract, got traded, then cut, and then never played in the NBA G League. Mm-hmm. So he was on the team technically, but he never played.
Okay.
I think he got cut like either after season start or like a little bit before that G League season. But the thing with him, which is different than all these guys, is that he played college basketball, went to the NBA draft. He even played a little bit of NBA preseason games, and that might be a little bit tricky. It's not an actual NBA game, but it's the preseason, and then he never played anything else after that. So now he's coming back, trying to play college basketball, and obviously trying to do that at LSU. And that court hearing for that preliminary injunction is on Monday, so we'll learn more about that. It's very, I've learned a lot about this.
It's crazy, man.
I've had to. It's very funny.
You need to go to law school to follow all of this. So
yeah,
I'm
getting my law school education right now.
Is the playing part the key part of that as far as the NBA goes? Having never played, you can sign, but if you play, that's when you're in trouble, and then that's where you're talking about preseason?
The NCAA part that they have an issue with is if you just sign a contract of any kind. So when he signed a two-way contract, which allows like a two-way contract for those who don't know, NBA deal that allows you to play at least half the games in the NBA, like the big program, mm-hmm. and the other half in the G League, you can't play over more than like 41 games unless you sign a full contract. That's not a two-way deal. So he signed a two-way contract with, I believe, the Utah Jazz, who then traded him to the Boston Celtics, who cut him, and then they got him on the G League team, and then he left the G League team because they released him. I guess I assume that he probably asked for his release because he probably thought, like, all right, I'm not making as much money as I hoped or get the chance to play in the NBA as I hoped. Let me try to get back to college. That's just speculation, and obviously he's trying to get back to college now, so it's very likely that that's the case. So the NCAA is upset or doesn't want him to play because, obviously, preseason games also is not a good look, but especially because he signed an NBA contract and especially because he played college basketball already. But it's very uncommon to have someone that played college basketball. He did it at St. John's, stayed for 3 years, two out of three at St. John's, and then leave, go to the NBA draft, go through that process, and then you want to come back. I'm not sure how much you remember of the Charles Bediako case when he was at Alabama, but it was a similar deal. Not exactly the same, but he went to play college basketball undrafted. He even signed a couple more NBA contracts, if my memory serves, he was able to get a temporary restraining order to play, but then once it went to like the Alabama Supreme Court, that's when the judge there denied it, because like, okay, you played in the G League, I believe, you signed multiple contracts. That's done. So the LSU case, if I have to guess, is that he only played 3 years of college basketball, so he didn't play a full four, and this wouldn't even be his fifth season. It would be his fourth in terms of actually playing college basketball if he's allowed, and that he didn't actually suit up in the G League or play an official NBA game. The NBA preseason is close. It's a little bit nebulous, but he didn't play technically an NBA game or G League game, and we'll find out, I guess, what the update is on Monday, if his preliminary injunction is granted.
The season starts October 8th with McNeese. I got that right?
Yes, that's the exhibition game, and then I believe a few weeks later is when it's actually the regular season opener against LSU New Orleans.
Yeah, November 3rd, I think it is, the 9th or something, whatever it is. So I guess what I'm wondering is, how competitive can they be? That's what I meant by throwing this thing together at the last minute.
Yeah. Sorry, we got off track. So trust me, I'm not trying to say what everyone would love to hear. This is honestly how I feel. If everyone comes together, including RJ Lewis, this is the top 15 team.
Really?
Because RJ Lewis, for those that don't know, he was the Big East Player of the Year. He was a second team All-American his last season of college basketball, which was 2 years ago now, and averaged 18 points. Really good defender too, 6'7", 200, I think 10 pounds, somewhere around there. Even though he didn't make it in the NBA as far as like playing as much as he hoped, he's a really good college basketball player. Like, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He's a really good college basketball player. And these international kids, I can go into detail, but I don't want to like throw out too many names to confuse people because we just don't know them yet. But they have a center that's from France that's really good, really good shot blocker, really good alley-oop catcher. They have an Italian wing that's a really good athlete. Think of like in the Tari Eason mold, where he's not necessarily like a pure bucket getter, but really good all-around player, a little bit of shooting, but not the best shooter, but a very good all-around player outside of the shooting. They got a kid from Brazil who's a good shooter at 6'9", and then they have a 7-footer that's also a good shooter who was on NBA radar. That's just in the international crop that LSU expects to get. And then the transfers they have, I'll just name one of the guys, Mo Diabate, Kentucky transfer. He started his college career at Alabama. He's a 6'7", very switchable forward. When he plays, he'll be one of the more impressive defenders in the SEC, if not just all in the country, because he can guard 1 through 5. Very physical, very athletic. So the point I'm making is that if this all does come together, as much as they won't have as much time to build that camaraderie, from a talent perspective, they're very loaded, and they're also very old. I believe RJ Lewis is also 23, and the youngest player that would be playing is 20 years old, which is one of the international guys.
Crazy. Toilo, you made it understandable, man. Thank you. I appreciate it. Hope you come back.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm
Thank
glad
you.
I can help, and I'll talk to you later.
All right, you bet. Toilo Brown, LSU men's basketball beat writer for The Advocate. Crazy stuff, man. We'll talk to Jeff Nowak when we come back about the Saints here on WWL. Miserably hot here. Not the case, I don't think, in California. Let's find out. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter. What's the weather like?
Oh, man, you got to put me on the spot. Yeah, I think I just looked. It's 68 degrees with a high of 79 today.
You son of a gun.
Eat your heart out, Louisiana.
Yeah, good for you. Well, you enjoy. Well, you've been out for practice, so you deserve it. Tell me, man, I guess injuries yesterday. I hate to hear about injuries piling up already, but it sure seems like it. It seems like going into the season, you thought, you know what, maybe we got a chance if we stay healthy. But now, I don't know. What's going on with Alvin Kamara?
Yeah, I don't, you know, it's funny because I think everyone, when you're talking about the Saints, you get kind of hyper-focused on the Saints, and it's like, man, we're all these injuries are so unfortunate. Why are we the only team that gets these injuries? And the reality is, if you go around to pretty much any training camp, every team is dealing with injuries in their own way. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the Falcons. They're down, you know, their star edge rusher they drafted last year. You know, the Panthers lost their star edge rusher to an ACL. The Bucks are trying to figure out how to play without Mecca Ibuka, their top wide receiver. So it happens. Mm-hmm. But Alvin Kamara, ESPN's Adam Schefter just reported that it's a sprained MCL, so he'll probably be out a month. That doesn't necessarily mean he'll miss time in the regular season. You're kind of right on that fringe where You know, September 13th is going to come up quickly. But, you know, if you're the Saints and Alvin, you're trying to find a way where you can get him out there. He kind of took a hit to the knee. I think he got a tight end kind of blocked into him. I wasn't watching the offense yesterday, so I didn't see it happen. But, you know, he left early. We also saw Quincy Riley leave early with a groin injury. That'll be one to watch because he's obviously a very important player. Probably shut him down for a couple weeks here as well just to play it safe. But, yeah, I mean, it's really just – it's opportunities for other guys to get on the field. The good news for the running back position in particular is Devin Neal and Kendre Miller, both guys who have missed, you know, a week plus of practice with Devin was dealing with a hamstring injury and Kendre was dealing with a back injury. Both of those guys were back at practice yesterday for the first time. They looked like full participants. They got through without issue. So, you know, it'll be it stinks to be without Alvin for a period of time. But the good news is he knows the offense. He was here last year. It just means, hey, you're going to have more time to get Travis Achane up to speed to incorporate Devin and Kendre and kind of get that situation set up behind them. So, you know, they have the bodies. I don't think you were going to try to get Alvin a ton of work in the preseason anyway. Mm-hmm. So it'll just be something we watch.
So yesterday was the Cowboys. Today is the Rams, right?
Tomorrow is the Rams.
Tomorrow's
the
Rams.
They had the Cowboys. Yeah, they had the Cowboys on Tuesday. A lot of fights. It was kind of feisty. I imagine that's something they'll be talking about not doing again against the Rams. That'll be on Thursday. So they're kind of getting a recovery day in between. We will be out there, but it's kind of just like a kind of walkthrough style practice. But yeah, we'll be back out there again on Thursday. Another walkthrough day on Friday, and then the preseason game against the Rams on Saturday.
Tell me about Chris Olave. I'm getting text about him going in the injury tent.
I think it was just kind of a heat-related thing. He came right back. It wasn't anything remarkable. The injuries were basically just Alvin and Quincy Riley. Ronnie Bell left early as well, but I think his was heat-related as well.
So,
which is funny because it's not hot.
You said you watched the defense or the offense?
I watched the defense yesterday. It's kind of been my plan for these joint practices is against the Jags, I focus on the offense. Against the Cowboys, I focus on the defense. And I think I'll probably be back over on the offensive side on Thursday.
What did you see yesterday from the defense?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you didn't have either, you know, of your top two nose tackles, Devon Gotcha and Kristen Miller. Both guys missed the practice. Kristen, the second-round pick out of Georgia, came out. In the preseason opener, he's dealing with a minor shoulder injury. But I thought they got decent pressure with all things considered, right? The Cowboys really focused on Chase Young, and I think that's going to be something we see is Chase Young is now of that level that teams are going to go into their week saying, we have to take Chase Young away, and whatever happens, happens, right? Mm-hmm. So they're going to send chips at him. You're going to see tight ends on his side. You know, he's going to have to kind of navigate that. And what that means is Carl Granderson, whoever's on the other side, Tyree Wilson, Cam Jordan, whatever, they're going to have to win their one-on-one matchups. And that is what we saw yesterday. I thought yesterday was Carl Granderson's best practice. They were wearing weird jerseys. That's a whole subplot. Carl Granderson was actually wearing Bub Means' 16 jersey, which is kind of funny to see. But he was in the backfield constantly. I thought Vernon Broughton also had a really strong day rushing the passer. And, you know, that's what you want to see. The Cowboys have a really good offense. Right, like CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens are elite wide receivers. I thought Kool-Aid held up well. On the opposite side, it was kind of hit or miss. George Pickens had a couple big plays downfield, but CeeDee Lamb, I mean, he had a couple receptions underneath, but otherwise he was kind of shut down. And we saw the Saints defense. Pete Werner said this after the practice, like they went into the day saying, hey, we want to be physical, we want to finish off plays. I think that's part of the reason there were so many kind of dust ups because on both sides of the ball, the defenses are trying to be physical, and the offenses kind of took exception to that a little bit. But I was a fan of what I saw. I mean, you're not going to shut down that Cowboys offense, but I think the Saints won enough on the defensive side of the ball that I feel pretty good about it.
Was one team chippier than the other?
I think they were both given it. I mean, the Saints are definitely not without fault in this conversation. I think in both instances, it was the defenses kind of getting after it and the offense is being like, you know, a little frustrated. And it's one of those situations where I think you're almost better off tackling than what was happening in that practice, mm-hmm. because you have guys catching the ball, maybe not being geared up to take a hit, but then, you know, on one play I watched just in the Cowboys tight end, I want to say it was Brevin Spanford, right? He catches the ball in the red zone, he tries to turn up and get into the end zone, and Justin Reed kind of lowers his shoulder and pops him, right? And then he kind of keeps going because you're not allowed to tackle him, and then Martin Emerson Jr. comes up and pops him again. And it's like the first hit, he was like, all right, fine. The second hit, he kind of took exception to. But, I mean, I think that was happening on both sides of the ball. So
I think you want a little bit of that, though, don't you think?
Yeah, there's a limit, right? There's a point where you want the physicality and you want the intensity, but then there's a point where it's taken away from the practice. I mean, on the offensive side, I mean, I could see the fights going on. I couldn't see what caused them. But, I mean, it was worse on the Saints offensive side. Like, I saw a play where Eric McCoy – threw a guy's helmet. He had his helmet ripped off. In another play, I saw one play where Brock Rechsteiner, I think it was Jalen Thompson, probably didn't know exactly who he was messing with in the sense that he was like, yeah, it's just a wide receiver. I mean, I could beat him in a fight. And then it's like, actually, he's like the son of WWE superstar Scott Steiner, and he's going to throw you down with some kind of crazy suplex, and that's what happened. Mm. He's probably watching that clip afterward being like, what the heck? But, So, I mean, I think it was equal opportunity fisticuffs, if that makes sense.
All right, let me take a break. We'll talk about the offense when we come back. Jeff Nowak, our guest, WWL Saints sideline reporter, live from California, 941 traffic now, WWL. 9:46, 14 till 10, back with Jeff Nowak, live in California. Saints in Oxnard, California. They'll take, not a rest day today, a walk-through day today, recovery day, and then they'll practice against the Rams tomorrow in advance of the game against the Rams on Saturday, right? Then we play the Cowboys the following week. Got that right? You got me muted, Jeff? Jeff, you got me on mute?
Sure did.
Okay, that's all right.
Yeah, you got it correct. It's
okay.
The Rams on Saturday, and then the Cowboys the following Friday.
Because it got a little confusing with the practices and the games and all that stuff. All right, so let's talk about Chris Olave. What kind of day did he have yesterday, and Tyler Shuck?
Yeah, you know, I watched the defense, right. So I'm kind of learning it through either clips or just conversations. I talked to Deuce and Haas about it, what they saw. And, you know, it was just another day where Chris and Tyler's connection just continues to improve. And we've seen that, you know, I thought Chris got off to kind of a slower start. That might be in part due to the fact that he didn't really participate in team drills during OTAs and minicamp, and he was kind of holding in for the first couple days of camp. So I think maybe that connection took a little bit to kind of get rolling. But the last few days, it's been really impressive. I think he had, you know, he was targeted 10 or 11 times. He had 9 catches, give or take one, where, you know, the ball may have squirted out. I think it's going to continue to be a situation where, you know, he's going to be elite over the middle of the field. I don't know if he's going to be that kind of field stretching option for you, but he can attack downfield. But when Chris is at his best, you know, he's just separating from defensive backs over the middle of the field, giving you an easy target and having the opportunity to kind of catch and run and most importantly, kind of protect himself. You don't want this guy taking big hits. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure he's available. He can be that kind of consistent 100 catch, 12 to 1500 yard guy. You know, he's never going to be the one you throw to on like an end zone fade. But that was kind of the idea. You're going out and getting these bigger bodied receivers, even Jordan Tyson, who's obviously on the mend right now. You know, you're talking about 6'1". He can be a jump ball guy. Devon Vele can be a jump ball guy. Bryce Lance is 6'3". He can be a jump ball guy. So, you know, I think it's an interestingly built offense. And I think it really does work for Chris Olave's skill set. And I'm eager to see it when we get all the pieces in the mix. Now it's kind of going to, I think you're going to lean more heavily toward the 12 personnel, like 2 tight ends or 2 running backs even on the field at the same time, and probably lean more into the 2 wide receiver sets with Olave and Vele until you can get Tyson back. But no, I think Chris has done everything you'd hoped he would. You give him that big contract, and he looks like a star out there. Like the Cowboys DBs, they couldn't do anything with him.
Did the Saints work out a couple of receivers or not?
I don't believe so, unless I missed that. Talked to Kellen yesterday, and he kind of said, hey, we don't necessarily feel the need to go out and rebuild our wide receiver room because one guy got hurt. It's just going to be an opportunity for, you know, guys like Bub Means, guys like Kevin Austin. Like, I'm sure they will work out receivers if they haven't already. That's just what they do. I think they always want to be prepared for the eventuality that they do have to go sign somebody. But I don't think Jordan's injury is one where they're going to feel like, oh, we got to make a trade. We got to build this room. you're going to see what other guys can offer. The young players have been, performing well. I think Berrion Brown is probably a little ahead of Bryce Lance in terms of, you know, he played in the SEC and he understands what NFL speed looks like a little bit better. His routes are maybe a little crisper. But Bryce Lance as well, you know, he's got that kind of elite build for a wide receiver, and he can be useful in a lot of ways. And I think it's going to be on the Saints to, especially early on, to find ways to incorporate those young guys in where they're ready to participate and maybe protect them from situations where they might not be ready, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Could you get a feel for how the Saints stop the run against the Cowboys?
You know, these practices are always tough because, you know, I can't necessarily see what's going on in the middle of the pile. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see a running back pop out and it's like, hey, well, he probably would have been tackled, but right. You don't know. So it's always tough to gauge the tackle breaking running backs, right? Like kind of the bigger bodied running backs who, you know, you can throw an arm at him, but he's going to run through it. It's always tough to tell. You kind of have to just go by who was in position to make a tackle and assume it would have been made. I thought early in the practice, the Saints got gashed a little bit. You know, Javonte Williams broke out for a big run early on, and I felt like that's when you really saw the physicality ramp up. And that it was after that point that you saw maybe some late hits and guys getting tackled to the ground where you're not supposed to get tackled to the ground. But that is an area that I have a little bit of concern for this team because they didn't really add to it. They didn't really build it. Mm-hmm. You know, you drafted Christian Miller. And, you know, Brian Brzee is down and Vernon Broughton is probably a little bit better from a run stuffing perspective. Brian has always been kind of that like elite kind of pass rush interior lineman. But from what I've seen so far, I'm not super concerned about it. I just think it's going to be probably their weaker point of the defense is, you know, that interior run. I think they have more athleticism on the edges than they have in the past. So I'm not as concerned about the backs getting to the edges. Mm-hmm. But I am a little concerned if teams are going to be able to go out there and average 4 yards a carry between the tackles, because it's really tough to win if you're allowing, you know, 3, 4, 5 yards on first down, because it just puts everything else out of whack. The offense can run whatever they want if they're in 2nd and 5, 2nd and 4. So you really need to see this team kind of stand up on early downs.
Yeah, that's what I asked. There's not more frustrating than that as a fan. Tell me about kicking. What did you see?
Yeah, kicking was on the opposite field, so I was kind of limited in what I could see, but both guys went 4 or 5. Tanner Brown missed from 39. Charlie Smith missed from 45, both to the right. So that's kind of where we've been at. Both guys are kind of hovering around 80%. My concern with Tanner is that, you know, he's missed fewer times. His percentage is higher on the whole. But, you know, 3 of his misses have been inside of 40. One is a PAT. Another was a doinked-in PAT, so that could have been a miss if he got unlucky. And then 2 misses from 39. Charlie has missed 10 kicks total, which is way too many. Mm-hmm. But I think 5 of them have been from 50-plus, right? So you kind of have to weigh that. Like, I need Tanner to be more consistent inside of 40. Like, if he could just clean that up, he wins his kicking job. But those are the misses that concern me, because those have to be 100% kicks. You can't be settling for a 35-yard kick and not getting 3 points.
Yep.
So we'll see how that develops, but it's been a little frustrating on that front.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too, Tommy. Thanks.
Out in California, Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter. Take a break. Find out what Newell's got planned when we come back on WWL.